It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A bill signed into law Friday codifies the definition of anti-Semitism into law, as critics say that law could stifle free speech.
Governor Tony Evers signed the bill, which would formally adopt a definition of anti-Semitism created by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance nearly a decade ago.
The law can be used to decide enhanced criminal penalties if a person is targeted in a crime because of their race, religion, or national origin. It also includes the definition in anti-discrimination laws.
The bill passed the Assembly 66 to 33 in February. Critics like the Wisconsin chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union and Jewish Voice for Peace Action said in a letter that the move could grant the government the power to label political criticism as discrimination.
Democratic Representative Lisa Subek co-sponsored the bill and spoke in favor last month.
This is guidance that we desperately need at a time when anti-Semitism is on the rise in our communities.
Eric Casper is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and director of the university's Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. Eric, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
What, in practical terms, what changes under this law? How could it be implemented?
Well, the law itself applies under a couple of different conditions. One is when there is a law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of membership in protected classes, including religion. And so this definition could be used when evaluating evidence of discriminatory intent for that type of situation. It also would apply when evaluating evidence of discriminatory intent for enhanced criminal penalties that are engaged in with a motive of against someone because of their membership in a protected class, including on the basis of religion.
Wisconsin already has enhanced penalties for crimes that are motivated by a victim's race, religion, color, disability, sexual orientation, national origin, or ancestry. What does this addition of this particular definition of anti-Semitism add that wasn't already there?
Well, it's a definition that was established by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance in 2016, providing a specific definition of anti-Semitism and providing a list of examples of what would be included in that. It looks like at this point, 37 states have adopted that definition when defining the term. And so there are a number of other states that have gone this route. The question with any kind of definition that would restrict potentially expressive activities is what that means in practice. In short, and the legislation states this, if it is underlying speech that is being restricted as speech, that would be a violation of the First Amendment. And there's a long line of Supreme Court cases that confirm that. The question here is that same speech, when used of evidence of discriminatory intent to engage in acts of conduct. And there we have some Supreme Court case law that if that's the purpose of it, that would not violate the First Amendment. And we can get into the details of that distinction from Supreme Court cases, if you like.
Right. And in particular, you mentioned many states have this definition of anti-Semitism codified into their laws. Has that been around long enough to where we have a track record of this definition of anti-Semitism and how it's applied in cases of discrimination or enhanced penalties?
You know, there's no U.S. Supreme Court decision that is interpreting the application of this language to either cases of discrimination or penalty enhancers in criminal cases. That is something that may be coming here as more states adopt it. But at least at this point, the U.S. Supreme Court has not weighed in specifically on this definition.
But you mentioned some comparables at the U.S. Supreme Court, even if not under this definition, things that might give us guidance. What have you seen there?
Yes. So one of the major distinctions the Supreme Court has drawn is between prosecuting a speech in a public forum based on content or viewpoint, which is almost always going to violate the First Amendment, versus using one speech as evidence of discriminatory intent for committing a crime or other illegal conduct. And again, there's a long line of cases with the U.S. Supreme Court saying even if the speech is hateful or offensive in a public forum, that is going to be protected. Now, that's different from what the rules and regulations might be for students in a public school or for public employees or for a private employer firing someone for what they say because the private employer is not bound by the First Amendment like the government is. But there's a long line of Supreme Court cases, including one out of the state of Minnesota called RAV versus St. Paul, where there was a bias motivated disorderly conduct ordinance. So if someone were to engage in hateful speech that arouses anger, alarm, or resentment on the basis of race or religion and a number of other protected class memberships, that was illegal. And the Supreme Court struck that ordinance down, finding that it was content and even viewpoint discriminatory. And again, for the government to punish speech in a public forum because of its content, because of its viewpoints, it's almost always going to violate the First Amendment. Conversely, though, the state of Wisconsin had a case that went before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1993, a case called Wisconsin versus Mitchell. And there it was the state's bias motivated enhancer, which prohibits one from engaging in criminal activity against a membership in a number of protected classes, and basically creates this additional criminal penalty that can be imposed above and beyond what would exist under that criminal statute. Supreme Court said that in that case, what is being punished here is the underlying conduct. Mm-hmm. And so one's statements in that regard that are motivated by bias can be evidence of their intent to commit a bias motivated crime in terms of the conduct. And so, again, that's the big distinction from the Supreme Court. The speech in a public forum has a lot of protection and can't be targeted by the government because of content or viewpoint, even if it's offensive or hateful. But that same speech can be used as evidence of a bias to commit an underlying criminal conduct.
We're talking about a state bill signed into law Friday adopting a formal definition of anti-Semitism. Eric Casper is with us from UW-Eau Claire, director of the university's Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. As we mentioned, there is pushback to this. A group of more than 30 organizations released an open letter pushing back at the bill, worried about censorship. And examples they suggest might be a university campus looking at that Holocaust remembrance definition. One example they give of anti-Semitism is applying double standards to Israel by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanding of any other democratic nation. So saying, hey, people could say, okay, if a professor or a, say, pro-Palestinian protest group on a campus violates, in somebody's perception, that clause, would a student be able to make a discrimination claim? Say, hey, this is creating a hostile campus environment for me. It's violating this anti-Semitism law. Concerns that that could limit speech on campus. How do you sort that out?
Yeah, and this goes to what the law adopts, which is not just the definition from the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, but also the act signed into law by Governor Evers. States that it includes the examples that are a part of that definition. And there's a list of several examples. And so it does potentially raise questions if the what is listed in those examples might cause a chilling effect on expression, where it may not be clear for some speakers based on those examples what is prohibited and what isn't. And again, the speech itself in a public forum would have a broad amount of protection under the First Amendment. The law itself comes down to when there has been a claim of some sort of discrimination, or there's been begun a prosecution for criminal conduct. Then can the statements here be used as examples of that biased motivation, that biased intent?
Do you anticipate this law being put to the test much, especially on the discrimination side of things? I think the penalty, the crime penalty enhancers, as you mentioned, have a lot longer precedent. On the discrimination side of these things, do you think we're going to see court cases on these?
That's a very real possibility. At the end of the day, that's where if you're going to see this, not only the definition, but also the examples that accompany the definition, if you're going to see that put to the test, it would be in some sort of case that arises because there's been a claim of discrimination, because it's something gets into court on that front, and it raises the question of are the statements here, do they rise to the level of proving discriminatory intent? The statements themselves in a public forum would be protected by the First Amendment, but are they sufficient proof of that discriminatory intent? And do they have the chilling effect on expression that people will be afraid to say things that would otherwise be protected speech because it could be used against them to prove some other underlying conduct? That's a potential where then we could see a court case develop, and eventually the U.S. Supreme Court may weigh in on that definition.
And then just to make the other part, the penalty enhancer for crimes, more concrete, we could think of an example where someone has targeted people for violence or maybe targeted an institution for vandalism, things like that. And if it's established they did this because the people were Jewish or because this institution was a gathering point for Jewish people, that's where this penalty enhancer would come into effect when they're charged with those crimes. Do I have that right?
Yes. And so then there are additional criminal penalties that could be imposed under state statute if it is because of that type of bias that motivated the crime with membership in a protected class as listed in the statute.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Eric Casper, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, director there of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. We've been talking about a new law in Wisconsin signed into effect by the governor last Friday. It specifies a definition of anti-Semitism when it comes to discrimination laws and penalty enhancers in instances of crime.